Hi there, listener, and welcome to episode 271 of the Ski Podcast. I am your host, Ian Martin, and this is a special interview with Kirsty Muir, the World Cup winning British slopestyle and big air freestyle skier. I spoke with Kirsty in November 2025 about her comeback from ACL and shoulder surgery to her first World Cup win last winter. We also discuss her journey from a dry ski slope in Aberdeen to becoming Britain's youngest competitor at the Beijing Winter Olympics in 2022. We also look forward to the Milano Cortina Winter Olympics taking place in Italy in February 2026, covering her training, her aspirations for the Games, and when the best time to roll out new tricks is. This episode is the latest in a series of interviews with high-achieving women in the world of snow sports. Previous episodes in this series have included interviews with Vicky Gosling, CEO of GB Snowsport, BBC Ski Sunday's Shemi Alcott, Kit Delaurier, the first person to ski the Seven Summits, as well as fellow Team GB freestyle skier Zoe Atkin. Right, let's have a listen to my interview with Kirsty Muir.
Right, I'm delighted to be joined today by Kirsty Muir, the GB Snowsport skier. It's great to have you on the show again, Kirsty. Whereabouts are you today?
I'm in Austria. I've been skiing up in Stubai in the glacier.
Oh, and for you, are you like purely in the park when you're training there, or do you get to do any free skiing as such as well?
Pretty much purely in the park, although there's one run down to the lift that we get at the end of the day, but we're mostly just straight lining because there's a bit of a hill at the end, so we're just trying to get as much as we can to get up that hill. And by the end of the day, it's a bit moguly, so we're just going over all the bumps, just straight lining.
Okay, well, we'll come on to your training a bit more specifically about what you're doing a little bit later on. It's actually great to have you back on the show. We actually last spoke in April 2023. Listeners last heard your voice in episode 242, and that was in March of this year when friend of the show Bethany Garner interviewed you in team just before your win in the slopestyle there. And that was a massive result. I think it was your first World Cup win, and it came after a pretty serious injury, which you'll come to. So how did that win feel?
Yeah, it was really great. Honestly, I just that whole winter, I was just kind of getting step back after, you know, the recovery. And then, yeah, in teen, I just really enjoyed the course, managed to get a run together that I like. And yeah, in the end, got it, put it down. And as you say, won my first World Cup, which felt incredible. Yeah, it just felt really nice after all the difficult times I went through, just to have that win and to know that I was back.
Yeah, sure. Well, okay then. I mean, you mentioned those difficult times, and I think, you know, we've got to address that. So can I take you back then, if it's not too painful to about it? I think it was December 2023. You know, some listeners may know, but for those who don't, I wondered if you could just let them know kind of where you were at the time and what event you were taking part in.
So I was in Copper Mountain in Colorado. I was competing in a big air World Cup. It was my third competition of the season. And yeah, I was in the finals. It was all going good. I landed my dub 14 first run. Second run went for a right dub 10 and just wanted to change my grab. Anyway, missed the grab, tucked in, overrotated a bit, had a bit of a crash. I felt a bit of a niggle in my knee, but not too bad. It kind of eased off. I was like, to my physio and coach, I was like, I want to go again. Like, I've got a chance at podium here. Or well, I asked my coach, I was like, do you think I've got a chance at the podium? He was like, yeah. So we went for it. Landed my third run, came third on the podium, was super stoked. Got home, just went for a precautionary scan on my knee and both my shoulder as well, because I had a bit of an issue. Anyway, came back third, fully torn my ACL, which I was very surprised about. And turns out I could have done it ages ago, or torn partially over time. Like, who knows? But anyway, had to go for surgery.
So just to like understand that fully,
yeah.
Possibly you did it on the second run there.
Pretty
possibly
unlikely.
You did it, you know, any time before that. You still managed to come third in the competition, and it was only just, you know, a precautionary scan that you discovered you'd actually torn your ACL.
Yeah, well, there was absolutely no swelling on the scan, which kind of showed that it wasn't then that it happened. There was a slight tear in my hamstring just at the very bottom by the knee, which could have been just what pain I felt in Copper. But yeah, it was just very random. And as I say, I could have been going around ages without one. Who knows?
And so I think most listeners would understand that an ACL is a pretty serious injury for any athlete. they tend to put you out for quite a long time. I think yours is also complicated by the fact that I don't know if this was a, you know, killing two birds with one stone kind of thing, but you also had shoulder surgery around the same time.
Yeah, so as I said, I had a shoulder scan as well because I kept partially dislocating it. I really should get surgery. So we were just going to do it at the end of the season, but then obviously knee surgery, might as well get the shoulder done too. So yeah, double surgery.
So, I mean, broadly speaking, it took you out for a year. And, you know, I'm really interested in that. And, well, two aspects, really, of that recovery. I mean, there's the physical side of things and then there is the psychological side of things as well. On the physical side of things, you know, you worked on different elements. I watched lots of videos while I was preparing to have our chat just now, ranging from coordination and strength and balance, all those kind of key skills. But essentially, you had to start by learning to walk again, right?
Yeah, exactly. I can't remember how many weeks on, a couple weeks on crutches. I think by day 12, it was maybe I walked without them for the first time just myself. Yeah, it was just the whole thing. Like, as soon as you're out of surgery, you kind of want to start activating your quads and your hamstrings and all the muscles again. But even still, I physically couldn't do it. Like, sitting down, just tensing my quad and lifting my leg, I physically couldn't do it at first. I remember my mum like had to come and just lift my heel a little bit just to help me so I could at least do some of it. It's baby steps. It genuinely is, and I think also I had to try and appreciate all the tiny wins, because as you say, it was quite like small, but then big things at the start.
Do you consider yourself to be a patient person? Because I think you probably have to be to go through that, right?
Well, yeah, I wasn't sure before. I think, to be fair, I am pretty patient, but I think I learned a lot more of that during that time too. Just I had a decent few setbacks during it, whether at the start, before I even had surgery. We drove down to London. My mum drove me down from Aberdeen to London to get surgery. Because it was private, they still did COVID tests. So I was asymptomatic, but I had COVID. So I had to wait 2 weeks. So we drove back to home. Then 2 weeks later, came back for the surgery. So even that was like a small set, you know, not small, but that was a setback. Yeah, for example, during, like at the end of the rehab, my hamstring just was not strong enough yet, even when I wanted to get back on the skis. So I had to stay in gym even more and stuff because I had a hamstring graft and it just struggled to get strength back. So I think things like that really did teach me even more patience.
For sure. And, you know, evidently you're working with, you know, lots of other people as part of this recovery. I know you're a Red Bull athlete. Am I right to say that you were able to kind of tap into their performance centres to kind of help with that recovery? Is that right?
Yeah, so they have two performance centres, one in LA and one in just near Salzburg. So I went to both of them for a couple of weeks each. And that was really, really great because they have everything that you could wish for during a recovery. And also, like, they give you a schedule and you were there like kind of a usual training time, like it was like, I don't know, 9 till 4 or something. I felt more like an athlete there because I felt like I was just doing more and training longer, and that was really good. But then also I at home I had the support of like Scottish Institute of Sport, and I couldn't have got through it without them either. The physios there, gym coaches, they all helped me so much through it all. So yeah, I had both sides, which was really amazing to have.
I mean, evidently you need to have that support team around you. Just tracking back to the Red Bull point of view, I mean, I guess, you know, we all see, you know, some incredible feats from Red Bull athletes. It's great to hear that it's a kind of very much a two-way thing. Even when you're not in action, you're getting that support there. And I'm interested as well, when you were at these performance centres, clearly it's not just skiers. It must be people from all sorts of sports there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, having their support during it was absolutely incredible. And they're with quite a few different athletes. I mean, Bragi, he's a bike guy. He was sick. I kind of hung out with him and quite a few other people. I mean, Bella Bacon, skier, she was there in LA. Jamie Huser, he does wakeboarding. He was in LA as well with us at the time. Like, there were so many different people, and it's so cool because you, one, get to train with them, and that feels great. But two, you get to hear their perspective on sports and their perspective even on life, and I was a lot to gain from that too, which was really cool.
Oh, excellent. So that's the kind of physical side of things, and I think probably a lot of listeners, you know, will have maybe had injuries and, you know, recovered from them over time. But I think the psychological side of thing is really different because, you know, you're a professional athlete and, you know, I hate being injured. I'm just an age grouper, you know, triathlete runner. It must have been very tough watching events that you wanted to be at.
It was really, really tough. I think straight away, pretty much when I was getting surgery, was when X Games was on. And obviously that's like one of my favorite events. It's so, so cool to be a part of. Obviously the previous year I'd managed to get the two podiums and I wanted to go back and I wanted to prove myself and kind of show even more what I had. So that was really difficult. And yeah, just watching each competition, as I say, I just really wanted to be there. I just really did. And yeah, that was definitely one of the tough parts. I mean, even coming back this year, I wasn't at the point to compete this year either. So I missed X Games again this year, which again was super tough. But as I say, it's all just moments I had to get through to get to this point, and I'm ready to compete there this year.
Yeah, I mean, when we spoke in 2023, as you mentioned, you just won a couple of medals at the X Games and you said it was a highlight of your career. You know, at that point, 2024, you're watching, you know, from a hospital bed. But I think in terms of your progression, I mean, you're 21 now. When we spoke before, I think you're 18. I read, or maybe I listened to you somewhere, that, you know, earlier in your career, and perhaps this is understandable, you know, if you're only like a teenager just trying it, maybe you felt a bit of that imposter syndrome. And, you know, going out to the X Games and getting a couple of medals, you evidently, you know, gave you that belief in yourself and really it ramped up that feeling about wanting to take part in these big events.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of the time I didn't feel like I deserved to be at the big competitions, and I didn't feel like, as you say, that imposter syndrome was definitely there. But yeah, those events like X Games, just being on the World Cup for longer and becoming actually friends with all the girls there, and everything just solidified feeling like I was definitely a part of it, which was really great.
Oh, so thinking about the mental side of things then, when you actually came back to being on snow, was it difficult taking on kickers again for the first time?
Yeah, like each step just felt like another little jump for me to take. I mean, when I did get back on skis, I had to just do turns and everything for 2 weeks. And then I got back in the park and like I had jittery nerves, you know, like I was so excited, and I couldn't tell you how excited I was, but there was definitely nerves there too. But yeah, as I say, took each step kind of slowly and built back up. Yeah, it was quite quick back into competition, to be fair. It was December 2024 that I got back in the park, and by January I was back in competition. So I would have loved to have a bit more time. We actually jumped quite quickly to get back to the comps.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think you managed eighth in your first event back in Aspen. That was in slope style. Big Aero a week later, you know, 12th and sixth in the slope style, Stoneham, before team. You know, when you won in team, did you feel in that lead up to team, yeah, having come back in and gone into competitions again and got some good results, did you feel a kind of flow? Was it all coming together again?
Yeah, absolutely. I think each comp I was doing more tricks and getting more back to being the skier I was kind of before and becoming stronger. As you say, when I did Aspen, I didn't have many of my tricks back. And then Stoneham, I got a couple more. Then by Teen, in the big air in Teen, I did the final, the night final before the slopestyle the next morning. During the big air competition, I did my first dub again after surgery. So each competition, there were steps to get everything back. And by Teen, I felt a bit more calm and a bit more ready, and just felt super good.
And the season finished with the World Championships, where you pulled off a sixth in the slope style. I'm guessing, you know, overall for your first season back, considering you only started competing again in January, you were pretty happy with that?
Yeah, I was. As I say, kind of built everything back and just was really feeling good in my skis. And yeah, was very happy with how the season kind of finished.
Now you're 21. You know, it's worth just thinking back. You know, when we spoke before, you were Britain's youngest competitor at Beijing Olympics, only 17 years old then. I wondered if I could take you back a bit further than that then, because evidently you're competing at a very high level at a young age. I think you started at Aberdeen Snow Sports Centre, maybe only 3 years old. How did that come about?
Yeah, so I was three when I started to ski, both at Aberdeen Dry Slope and at the Glenshee and the Lecht, the Scottish Mountains. And it was basically just my mum and dad both skied, and so that my older brother, younger sister, and I, we could all ski together as a family and maybe get on a holiday or two here and there. That was the whole goal, was just to ski as a family. And yeah, then I found freestyle.
When you say you found freestyle then, because I'm thinking at 3 years old, you weren't, you know, doing rails yet or something like that. Did you, a lot of people go through that route of, you know, doing race training and then segueing into freestyle? Is that what happened with you?
Yeah, so I did the Saturday Kids Club. I think I was about six at this point, and we would do kind of race-ish training on the normal slope most of the session, and then for the last like 10 minutes or so, we'd go over to the freestyle slope, and the coaches could genuinely just see how much excitement and joy I got from just even doing a tiny air over the tabletop at the dry slope. So they suggested that my parents take me to the freestyle night, and that's kind of where it all started.
That's your local freestyle night. You did maybe, I guess, a few local competitions, but I know that you went to the Brits in 2018. I think you were 13 years old and you won there. Was that the tipping point that, you know, led it from being, let's say, more of a hobby to something you took a bit more seriously?
Yeah, I always try and think about it. I don't know when specifically I started to take it a lot more seriously. Going out to the Brits in Lax definitely did feel like a bigger step. Just starting to go away for a week here and there training, I think that's probably when it started to feel a bit more real, and kind of each season we'd take a little bit more time and a little bit more time out there, and it definitely felt more real.
I find it interesting as well, you know, you came from having snow sports and you went through the system, you went to the Brits. I'm interested, there's another 17 year old from Aberdeen at the moment who won the big air at the European Youth Olympics, and that's Sandra Cohn, and I believe you're kind of mentor to her, is that right?
I mean, maybe slightly more, just we're good, really good friends. I feel like I've seen all of her journey at the dry slope, because she started in Aberdeen as well. To be fair, she was like later to the sport than most, but she's progressed so quickly and she is continuing to progress. And I'm so excited. She's just coming back from her knee injury, and hopefully this season she'll be back on the snow. And I'm so excited for that. It's lovely to have another girl coming out of the dry slope.
And particularly from, you know, your local town as well. So you moved your way up the ladder. You medalled at the World Junior Freestyle Champs. You're onto the Europa Cup circuit, I think only 15. And then in Beijing, I mentioned you were Team GB's youngest competitor there. Fifth in the big air, eighth in the swipe style. Those are the best results in a disappointing games for Team GB. We did discuss this last time we were on the show, but it was very difficult circumstances there. I think you told me at the time that you were having to test for COVID like multiple times a day during the time you were there.
Yeah, it was a difficult Olympics with that sense. As you say, it was COVID tests every morning before breakfast. I mean, beforehand, we had to do a lot of tests as well. It was really quite strict, split up at glass panels beside us when we were eating and stuff. So we were all split up. And yeah, more so as well, I couldn't have friends and family there, which is another reason why I'm so excited for this one. It was a different Olympics, but I mean, especially my big air, I had a great, great time. I felt really proud of how I skied, and I felt that my tricks, I did them the best I could on the day. I felt like the best I could have ever done those tricks at that point in time. So I really take that as a positive from that games.
Yeah, sure. Well, I've talked to, you know, both Pat Sharples and Vicky Gosling, CEO of GB Snow Sports, head coach of GB Snow Sports before, and the circumstances around those games were extremely difficult in the build-up and, you know, while you were there as well. And you just said just now, you're looking forward to, let's say, a local Winter Olympics. You know, we're almost 4 years on from that now. Milano Cortina is coming up in February. You'll be competing. I think your events are in Livigno. Will you be taking part in both slope style and big air, or is there some qualification required before you can say you definitely got a place?
Well, yeah, there's a qualification period, and it doesn't get officially announced until pretty close to the games. At the moment, I'm looking really, you know, in a good spot for it. I'm really just aiming for that and trying to progress as much as I can before then. And yeah, just really looking forward to it.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, your world rankings are fourth in slope style and ninth in big air, which should be qualifying you for sure. Can I ask you a little bit about your preparations then? I know that you're in Austria at the moment, but not very long ago, you were out in New Zealand. Is that right?
Yeah. So I was out in New Zealand for about 5 weeks. We kind of parked ourselves there in hopes of getting some good training, and the weather never really helped us out there. It was pretty windy all the time, pretty much. We had short windows. Overall, I'm really glad that we're getting some good weather here because I just need some training time.
And you've mentioned we a few times. So, yeah, who is we in this context? Do you train with other athletes or are you talking about your coach, physio, etc.?
Yeah, so Coach Joe and Jamie, but also the other athletes on the team, James Pouch, Tom Greenway, Chris McCormick. That's kind of the crew we travel with at the moment. And Alison, physio, sometimes comes out with us. That's our crew. It's like a small crew compared to certain countries, but it's a good crew.
So who are Joe and Jamie then?
Yeah, so Joe Tyler and Jamie Matthew. Joe I've trained with since I was, like, I think I first went out to Lax to train with him when I was 11, when I first went out to the Brits. And I've known Jamie for a long time as well, with being coach at GB Snow Sports. He kind of came to the dry slope sometimes and came and like just looked at kind of the up-and-coming skiers and did a little bit of training with us here and there.
You mentioned Chris McCormick there. I actually saw him on Saturday because there was a peak performance event in London that he was at, throwing some tricks over this incredible environment that they created in a skate park where they put snow down. It was brilliant. Have you spoken to him since then?
Yeah, I did. I spoke to him today. I was saying that because that was a sick event. It looked really, really sick. Yeah, he did a 4-on-6-out, which I was like, whoa. And yeah, I think he enjoyed the event. It looked like a really cool setup.
Oh God, it was cool. My son who came with me said, this isn't the event for you, Dad. It's like for my generation. But I thought it was fantastic. Right. So I'm interested, you know, working with the coaches, working with Joe and Jamie, you know, what's the process for building new tricks then? Because, you know, you need to kind of add extra tricks to your quiver. I know you get several runs in the different events. And you know, sometimes you just want to put a run down, get a good placing, make sure you qualify. But sometimes you're kind of going for, you know, the podium, going for the medals. So when you bring those tricks in, what's the process for that?
Well, kind of, I guess, learning a new trick. Nowadays, it starts pretty much at airbag. That is how the sport's progressed so quickly in the last few years. We use a trampoline too, but the airbag's the big part. It's just a safer location to try the new tricks and you can rep them out a bit more. Yeah, kind of starts there. Then you get to the snow, obviously, and you kind of just build up through each of your tricks and stuff. And then there gets to a point where you've just got to go and send it, which is sometimes the tricky part, but kind of just have to trust that from the airbag, you've got that muscle memory, you've got that feeling in the air, you'll deal with whatever comes up and put it down.
As far as an airbag is concerned then, do you rent those as a team? You know, you don't take around your own airbag with you, do you?
No, there's a few different airbags in a few different countries in Europe that we go to. The one that I like the most is in Bangor Park, not far from here in Austria. I'd love in the future for us to have an airbag in the UK, but for now we go and use the other ones.
I think in Cardrona, isn't there an idea that they're building a massive airbag down there that maybe is going to be used for New Zealand athletes?
Yeah, they've already got one. They've been training on it this summer, or summer, their winter, yeah. Whilst I was down there. But yeah, it's just for their athletes.
Yeah, just for their athletes. Such a shame. I mean, it looks like an amazing facility. Okay, so what about training off the snow? You know, I mentioned, you know, when you were doing your recovery, you know, you're looking at coordination, strength, balance. I guess you're working on all those sort of things in the gym. And do you do any cardio? Is that not so relevant?
Well, I'm not the biggest fan of cardio, I'll say that. I did do some during my rehab. I mean, I kind of was using mountain biking as my cardio pretty much, because to be honest, you do get a good workout with that. Even on the e-bike, you just get more laps. That's how I was doing the cardio. But yeah, just a lot of time in the gym, a lot of strength training. That's where my focus mainly is, especially when I was getting the muscles back. But now it's building, but maintaining it throughout the season. So I do a lot of gym work.
In fact, I read somewhere that, you know, you mentioned before you didn't know that you were injured when you had that on a torn ACL, and you were still doing your regular squats in the gym despite the fact you had a torn ACL. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, even after the scan and after I found out before the surgery, I could do all the stuff just normal, which again was it was just weird going for surgery when you could do it all as normal. We kind of had it that, obviously, with the Olympics being in 2026, like if it came to a point later on where my knee became unstable and I couldn't do the stuff and had to go for surgery then, and it's quite late before the Olympics. So it was, I guess, partially peace of mind, get it done, partially just it was better timing. to do it then.
Actually, you mentioned mountain biking. I recently interviewed Rhys Bell, who is one of the top female GB slalom athletes. She does loads of mountain biking as well. You can swap notes on that if you come across each other, although she'll probably be in Cortina and you'll be in Livigno. But regardless, as far as sport is concerned, you're pretty good at a pitch and putt as well, is that right?
Well, I only just started it in New Zealand. We were just doing it as a bit of a pastime, but on the last day, just before flying out, I did manage to get a hole in one, so I'll take that.
So what are your plans for this season? Evidently, you know, you're Milano Cortina February. In the lead up to that, I don't know, if I was training for an event, I'd be thinking about periodization or something like that. Do you kind of try and build in so you peak for Milan Cortina?
Kind of. Right now, we're just doing a lot of training these 2 weeks. Then I go off to China for two big airs and America for another one. So we kind of just get into competition. Partially, competitions are good because you go and get your big stuff done, like you've got to. So it's a good environment to do some stuff, but kind of just a lot of training. After Christmas, we've got Aspen World Cup, then there'll be another one in Lax, and then there's X Games, and then a week, and then the Olympics. So it's quite a lot of competitions before then.
X Games comes before the Olympics. I didn't realise that. Okay, that'll be interesting. So here's another question for you then. Do you keep those high-value tricks that you've been working on hidden, or would you roll them out early to, you know, test them out in competition?
I mean, I think it really depends on the person. Some people just go all out. Some people keep things hidden. I mean, every competition I enter, I want to try and go for a win. So I try and do that in the way that I can. But I mean, at competitions like X Games, you want to do your best stuff there as well. So I think it's always situational, whether the course feels good, whether you feel good, lots of different things.
So you can continuing to compete in both big air and slopestyle. I mean, I'm not saying you have to, but if you had to choose one, is there one that you prefer over the other?
I have to say, I think slopestyle. I really like rails as well as jumps. So I like the combination that comes into a slopestyle run. I like the creativity that people include in their runs. There's hardly a run that's ever the same. So I like that you can add your own flair to it. And I also like that, I mean, you've got to be consistent through your run. You've got to land every single trick. So that adds another element to it, another element of like flow through the run. Yeah, as I say, love jumps, but got a slope style. I just love that it's both.
Well, I've got so much respect for you, Kirsty, for the patience and the work that you put through in that, you know, down year, and to be able to get through that, to do the work and then come back so successfully as you did last winter. I think on behalf of all of our listeners, we definitely wish you the best for the winter. And evidently for, you know, Milan Cortina as well. I spoke to Tim Warwood at the ski show, who said that you're at your best when you're skiing with no pressure. Is there this kind of a strange way of approaching it, because you've come off the back of a relatively quiet time, you might feel yourself going in there with less pressure than some of the other riders?
I don't actually know, to be honest, because I always put pressure on myself. Like, I always have that, like, as I say, I always have that urge to win. I mean, it's what you have as a competitor. But yeah, I think I'll just try and, as I say, just breathe and take it as I can, and block everything else out, and just be me in the course of that moment.
Well, fantastic. I mean, evidently you need to have all of those skills to be a competitor and athlete at the level that you're already competing at. So really nice to speak to you, Kirsty, and thanks for sharing that story with us. And, you know, as I said, I have so much respect for the way that you've come back from a significant injury like that. On behalf of all of the listeners of the Ski Podcast, wish you all of the best for this winter. Thank you.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And yeah, looking forward to it.
So I really enjoyed my chat with Kirsty, and I hope you did too. That interview was recorded in November before the start of the season, and I am delighted to report that Kirsty followed up her first World Cup win in teen with her first big air win in China in late November. And at the time of recording, Kirsty was due to take part in the slopestyle in Aspen just as this episode is published. So look out for how she gets on there. Her two big events next month will be on the 9th of February for the slopestyle and the 16th of February for the big air. But don't worry, we'll definitely be updating you on the Ski Podcast as to how she gets on. Now, you can leave me a comment on Spotify, Instagram or Facebook if you want to give us some feedback. I'd love to know what you think of our different episodes. Our handle is at the Ski Podcast, or you can drop me an email to theskipodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on WhatsApp for exclusive material released ahead of the podcast. You can find the link to that in the show notes. There are now 289 episodes of the Ski Podcast to catch up with. If you've enjoyed this episode, then go to theskipodcast.com, have a search around the tags and categories, and you're bound to find plenty more to listen to. If you'd like to help the Ski Podcast, there are three things you can do. You can follow us or subscribe, and that way you will never miss an episode. You can give us a review on Apple Podcasts or leave us a comment on Spotify. And if you're booking ski hire this winter, don't forget that you can save money on your ski hire with an additional discount by using the code Ski Podcast when you book at insportrent.com. Simply take the link in the show notes and your discount will automatically be applied. Right, for now, I'd like to thank Kirsty for her time and wish her all the best for next month in Italy. We will be back with another episode next Friday, but until then, wherever in the world you're listening right now, thank you for joining us and goodbye.